Welcome to Made It with Connor Tompkins.
Hey everyone, I'm here with Vadim. Vadim is a post-exit founder. He sold his business, I want to say...
Back in 2014.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So I've been doing a bunch of other stuff since then. Yeah.
So it's been 10 years. Tell us a little bit about some of the stuff that you've been up to since you sold your company.
So when I sold my company, I was actively involved in the ad tech industry, in the advertising. So I've been running kind of, so basically the company that I sold, it was a spin-off that originally was created under the umbrella of my first company.
So tell me about this company that you spun it off from a previous company that you had.
So I started the company that was running in-game advertising in the social media apps on Facebook and a few mostly Russian-speaking social media networks like VKontakte, Mail.ru, etc. At the time, it was very they had a very large audience. They were much bigger than Facebook. They opened up their app platform.
I remember this being special because Facebook was moving in country by country, and they weren't able to succeed in Russia.
Yes, because in Russia they created VK.com, and they basically, the front end worked much faster than Facebook. So yeah, they took the, that's true. They took the concept from Mark Zuckerberg. I mean, they copied a lot of stuff, but they made it better. That's for sure.
I think this is interesting because whenever you hear about Facebook and how they grew, right? They went country by country and they squashed everybody.
Yeah.
But these guys, they were so
quick. They launched exactly at the right time because I think Facebook launched 2005 or something, or 2004. And I think VK launched when I was, freshman in university or something. It was 2007 or 2006.
Okay.
And maybe 2 years later than Facebook. Basically, when Facebook was already, when they expanded beyond the campuses, VK already, I think the guys, I mean, the founder of VK already started to work on that. So it was a big deal. It was a very large audience there. And they decided to create an app marketplace, and then they opened it up. So for third-party advertising, it was a very big deal because you could just basically create a monetization solution for these app developers because they didn't have any monetization ways.
Where were you when this was happening?
So at that time, I was in Odessa, Ukraine, my hometown, but since I was 18, I was trying different businesses. And I was doing, e-commerce store, a game development company, web development studio, a social media marketing agency, lots of stuff. And it was more, I treated it more like a game, more like a hobby. At the same time, I was still trying to not get kicked out from university. And
you're in school while you're...
My degree was business and management. And I was basically doing barely a minimum just to not be kicked out because I was working on my other stuff and education.
That sounds familiar.
And education was not a priority for me at all, right?
It's hard to be focused on the class when you're actually building a business and you're like, this is so much more interesting and it's actually generating money.
Of course. And I was kind of technically studying for business and management, but in fact, I was getting all my knowledge working on all my stuff, right? And I truly believe that entrepreneurship cannot be taught, but it can be learned, right? So that's why I realized that in business management, you cannot really kind of be taught to know this. You can learn it by actually running your companies, making your own mistakes. So that company, it was my first kind of real company.
Yeah.
It was bootstrapped. So I started to run ads on this VK.com. I was maybe one of the first monetization providers for app developers on VK.com. And then we started to expand into Mail.ru. It was already a rival of VK in Eastern Europe. And then we expanded into Facebook. And at that time, VK opened its ads API for any small and medium-sized businesses.
Yeah.
So on Facebook, there is this targeted advertising. So VK opened their own targeted ads platform, and they opened up their ads API. So we built, inside my company, it was called Clicky. We built a prototype of a solution that was technically a dashboard on top of your advertising panel. So if you're an SMB running ads through VK.com.
Okay.
That product that we built, it helped you to make it more, to run campaigns more effectively, to have more reporting, to add conversion tracking, like all kinds of stuff, right?
That you were creating not that feedback loop.
Yeah, so that was not available at the time. So basically we made advertising account on VK much more powerful and robust on top of using ads API.
How are you able to move so quickly? Is it because you had this development agency?
I had a friendly team of developers who are still, they were not on the payroll, but I've been giving them some projects all the time, like my experiments. And they were kind of, they were always available for me. And that's why I was able to move fast.
Yeah.
So, and basically, yeah. So I created that prototype inside my company Clicky because that was something different. It was not anything related to serving ads on the apps. It was basically a SaaS tool.
Right.
Right. It was a SaaS tool and like for SMBs. And it went, I mean, it went pretty, I mean, I think it went okay in Russian-speaking region in Eastern Europe, but I couldn't scale it further because my goal was to scale it overseas, to scale it in the US market.
Yeah.
And I didn't have enough experience. I only knew about bootstrapping. I not even knew. I didn't know that there were any other ways to run business besides bootstrapping. And I think I didn't move as fast. Not even as fast, but what is interesting that I had a few competitors and they all died because that market eventually that market actually ceased to exist. I mean, it's like any companies that helped advertisers to run ads on top of VK.com, et cetera, they ceased to exist because that market in Russian speaking region is very corrupt in terms of if you want to, because we also wanted to help the agencies to run ads effectively, but agencies only cared about what was called super commission, that if you give them a kickback on their budget. And I said, guys, really, come on. We don't care about your software. If you're going to give us a kickback, we're going to run ads.
Do we say kickback or do we say like affiliate model?
Well, there it was mostly a kickback because it was mostly in a gray zone because the kickback was usually money paid not to the business, but to the manager or the decision maker. Privately, that was that. And I didn't understand that at the beginning, then I understood it. And that's why all those businesses, all those entrepreneurs who wanted to jump into this and run and build a SaaS business to help new advertising tool to expand it actually and help them and basically to build upon it, they all ceased to exist because their business model didn't work because the value that they wanted to provide was not a real value for those people. Mm. Those people, though, the agency guys, they only wanted to make money right now, and ideally to get them into their pockets.
That's tricky for American businesses and in business school. Yeah. One of the scenarios is you have this company and you're working in these different countries, and different countries have different different guidelines as far as like bribery charges or kickbacks and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little tricky for American companies or working in different countries where you have different standards. Yep. And how do you compete in those countries?
Right? Yeah.
And so that's kind of an interesting kind of like international business theme, right? Is that what you can do in one country is not standard practice in another country. Whenever I hear about your business, there's some things that are really interesting. There's like in-app ads are 100 millions of plus businesses. There's a lot of businesses that exploded overnight.
Of course.
So that's a pro, right? Yeah. Cons is that you're dependent on platform.
Of course.
Right? And like the platform has a weird relationship with you where they want you and they don't want you, right?
Yeah. You depend on a single platform. And also when you build your ad serving engine or something like that, technically your IP doesn't matter. Everyone can copy this very quickly because technically what you develop is not very complex. So the threshold to enter your market is very symbolic, right?
One of the advantages that you had is that you had your development team and you were able to move very quickly.
Yeah.
But one of your barriers is that, if I'm understanding it correctly, is that whenever you're looking at moving to the United States, it requires more capital connections and it's a little bit of a jump.
Yeah. So I had my development team. I was very hungry. In terms of, I didn't accept and no as an answer, and I was very persistent, and was very agile, very quick. But I lacked experience in terms of building a really global business. I didn't know about any other ways to build a global business, like how to get enough capital, enough resources to be basically accelerate my learning curve and to accelerate my like the growth of my company. I only knew about, I thought the only way to do that was bootstrapping. And I've been actually thinking that way all the way until I saw that business that was called AdCenter that was spun off from my first company after I realized that I have to raise money to it because that business was burning cash.
Was it burning cash on the development or marketing? Or?
We were making only like, let's say, a small commission on top of the advertising budget, right? The business model was that you get, I don't know, a few percent commission on the ad budget. But in order to get big budgets, I have to give away, I have to give kickbacks to all these agencies. I had to basically go and wine and dine them. I had to go to sauna with them, whatever. Like I had to be
to banya.
I have to give them expensive presents. And that was just my game. I despised that. That's why I actually wanted, that's what I all the time I wanted to, as soon as I realized that I'm going to be an entrepreneur, I wanted to move to the United States because for me, I mean, Ukraine is a great country, but in terms of entrepreneurship, it's not a great country at all because entrepreneurship was not very respected there. And because in order to be an entrepreneur there, you had to be kind of a part of gray economy if you really wanted to make money there. And it was against my values, against my principles. So basically I had to sell the business just because otherwise I would shut it down later because I couldn't attract enough advertising budgets to make enough commission, to make it really scale, and also that I also could reinvest some capital back into the company to grow and expand into different markets.
So help me a little bit with numbers here. Yeah. This is 10 years ago, so I'm thinking 2013, 2014.
Yeah, so I sold it in 2014, and I launched it in like 2012. I mean, it was like 2 years.
So that's a pretty tight period, right, from start to end. How many employees did he have working on the business? How much ad revenue was flowing through? What was your margin on it?
Well, I mean, I think at that time in total, so it was like it was sitting. I mean, I had the same office, right? And there was like people working at Clicky, like working on this basically ad network. We can call it an ad network. And at the same time, we there was a small team building this SaaS tools. Maybe on SaaS part, I had like maybe up to 20 people, not more than that. And 20 people more, or maybe 30 people more, were building ad network. So in total, I think my team was like 50 people a maximum, but only 20 of those were focused on developing like this SaaS tool. And we were getting the commission from 1% to 5%, I think 5% for direct clients, 1% for agencies, maybe 2% on agencies. I mean, that's pretty common. We didn't charge any subscription revenue yet. And I think at that time, business owners wouldn't even understand that. They would like and say, "Why? What is the sense for me to pay this?" Because the market was so unprepared for that yet. It was like, especially like 10 years
ago,
what
was normal.
Right? I mean, in the Eastern Europe, it was maybe like in the US, like I don't know, the beginning of like 2000, maybe I mean, 2001 or 2002, right? Like first years of SaaS economy. So it was like the first years of SaaS economy in the Eastern Europe, right? So that's why I couldn't even charge them a subscription fee. I mean, I don't remember the budget actually, but I remember because it was a long time ago. But what I remember is that a few times we were near break even, right?
Yeah.
A few times, but then one of the advertisers or an agency would kind of, because yes, the switching cost was so low. That was one of the problems of ad tech business, that switching cost was so low because they could just switch there to another third party provider very quickly, promptly, right? And at that time, so our revenue was fluctuating a lot. The churn was sometimes high, and so we were not able to build projections for a long term. And eventually I just decided to get in touch with a few people I thought would understand it and would need it. I knew those people already, and one of them was actually my friend. I mean, he was running a company in the US, but he was originally from Ukraine. The company is called AdTelligent, and they do, it was called Tverda Media, now it's called AdTelligent, and they were doing ad network. Then they went into RTB, real-time bidding, etc. And they needed AdCenter to get into social ads. So that's why they got it. And I mean, it was not a big exit, but I get my first kind of liquidity, and then I started to invest actively into my kind of main company, like
called your parent company.
I also started to invest in startups. I launched one of the first startup accelerators in Ukraine. Like, I started to do different things. And
what was the sale price for the company?
I mean, it was like seven figures, like, but it was not big. Yeah, okay.
But it's enough that you're able to do this incubator and feed the parent company. Also just having liquidity is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, so I was like 25 for me.
That's pretty good for like at 25. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so you had, was it the biggest incubator in Ukraine?
It was the first one, maybe not. I mean, we incubated 12 companies, invest our own money with my two friends. And at that time, two others launched. One of them was backed by one of the richest oligarchs in Ukraine, Pinchuk. Yeah. But I think they incubated pretty much the same, maybe the same number of companies, maybe slightly bigger, but not like 100 companies, right? Okay. And another one was backed by another oligarch. So like, it was like two oligarch-backed incubators.
And you.
Yeah.
And I did you shake their hands and you're like, hello, Pierre?
I mean, yeah, they had their intermediaries. They had, they had
your people talk to their people.
Yeah, of course, yeah. So, and I mean, and that model just didn't work for anyone on that market because since then we don't have any real accelerators in Ukraine, because at that time founders were ready to just they were not ambitious enough. They didn't want to move, because this can only work if they move to the more developed market, if they move to the US, etc. But they wanted to build they were not very ambitious. They wanted to basically build lifestyle businesses, but they pretended that they wanted to build startups in order to get some cash. And it just, I mean, and also probably we did some mistakes, because my first mistakes in investing were that I picked great ideas, but I underestimated whether the teams were ready to grind and endure for 5-10 years.
A lot of times whenever I see great ideas, I'm like, this is fantastic, but it might be something new, right? And like, if it's something new, then you have to educate the market on what that new thing is.
Yeah.
And it's not proven. Like, if I know what your playbook is for building an ad market, I know it's possible. I know what the margins are. I know there's some knowns, right? Yeah. And so you're risking not just on their ability to work, but also the idea.
Yeah.
And whether there's room for the idea.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, so ideas that we invested in are still great.
What were the ideas?
One of the ideas was, some of them were opportunistic, that there was a device that you wear when you sleep and it produces some electromagnetic waves that help you to, that increase your chance to have a real dream. I mean, interactive dream.
I've heard about active dreaming, conscious dreaming. Okay.
And it was called Lucidink, like Lucid, whatever.
Did it work?
I mean, it worked for some people. I tried it. I think it didn't work for me, but it worked for my partners. So it worked for some people. It didn't work for some people.
Is it like a fancy hat you wear? It's like a hat.
It's like a hat, but it was not fancy at the time. It was really clunky, but I think it worked for some people. But and then eventually one of the founders moved to the US. But I think I still don't understand. I think because 50% of people didn't feel it, 50% of people felt it. They needed just more capital, much more capital to sustain until they get some universities behind them, some researchers behind them. They need
But that's the whole thing around like the education piece, right? Because a lot of people don't know what active dreaming is, like for one thing. Yeah. And then like a lot of people may or may not have this experience.
Yeah.
And there's like, did you read that article in the Wall Street Journal? I was talking 3 years ago. Not everyone has that monologue that kind of runs through their head.
Oh, right, yeah.
And not everyone has the ability to like imagine pictures or imagine like, not everyone's a visual thinker, and there's certain populations that think or function different ways. And so I think it's interesting that with this group, you're like trying to find these like people that have the ability to act or dream. But what is that worth to that person? Like, if I could act a dream, that's worth a lot to me. I can do some really cool stuff in my dreams. Yeah, like it'll be great. Yeah. But there's a lot of people that don't know about it.
Exactly. They had to invest in education. They didn't have a lot of demand ready to basically get this thing for whatever price. And that's why they just didn't have enough capital to sustain until they get there, until they get to basically, I don't know, from nice to have to painkiller or something, right? And then, well, like, and we had some other things that just were in the same pattern, great ideas, but just founders were not ambitious enough or didn't move to the US or just were not great presenters or just great, because, I mean, there are like, they were like great ideas, but not strong founders. Or like, for example, like great ideas, but founders were not ready to pitch, right?
Okay.
And when they're not ready to pitch, now I understand that it's it can have very negative consequences because they likely won't be able to secure enough capital.
You've invested in 50 companies now. Which ones have made it?
I mean, yeah. So at that time, we invested in 12. Then I invested personally as an angel, probably, I don't know, maybe another 7, 8. And then I got, and then I launched a VC with my business partner, Iher, and we invested in 45. Yeah, so in total, maybe it's like around 60. But as on behalf of VC, we invested in 45 since the end of 2021. So yeah, so in my angel portfolio, I have a few companies that 5x return, like but I expect a much bigger return on another half of my shares, right?
Right.
And I have a few post Series A, maybe almost Series B companies in my personal portfolio. And in my VC portfolio, I already have a few Series A companies that might be very big wins. But yeah, we need to wait for longer. Time.
Let's talk about the company that you've been running for the past 7 years.
Yeah. So like 8 years since inception of the idea, since I started financing it, but 7 years since I joined as a CEO.
Right.
Because at first it was just an experiment for me. I was still running my previous company, right?
That right.
I was telling you about, Clicky. But then at the same time, I decided that at some point of time, I got fed up with advertising, with ad tech, with anything having to deal with all this kind of scam, chargebacks, people surrounding me who wanted basically just to steal money from me. I mean, like people in the industry, the tech industry was very dirty at that time. It was like 2016, 2015, especially if we're talking about mobile installs, people promoting apps, right? There's a lot of fraud there, a lot of scam, and a lot of artificial installs. Probably you've seen these images with the iPhone farms in China where you have thousands of iPhones.
Oh my gosh, so you're dealing with like SMM panels, right? Is that the right
term? No. It's like some people were invested in thousands of iPhones.
Right, and they're all lined up and they're doing watch time.
All the time, running apps.
How do you counter that?
Installing apps.
How do you counter
Well, that? I mean, it's always kind of, it's basically like it's never-ending game.
Like you catch up.
You catch up and then they go ahead and then you catch up. And they were trying and they basically, of course, these companies were trying to send me some traffic, some installs, pretending that they are real.
Right.
And then my advertisers refused to pay for some installs because they blamed us. And we were constantly in between.
That makes sense.
You know, this fire. Like,
so Vadim, you're like in the middle of this.
Yeah.
And so you have like these apps that are trying to get promotion. You're facilitating the ad buy.
Yeah.
And you have these places in the Pakistan and India
yeah.
that have thousands of phones that are one installs, and so there's companies that these people are going to say, I want to buy 1,000 installs or 100,000.
Yeah, in certain geography, certain targeting criteria, etc. And a lot of, we had thousands of publishers who were legit. They were app developers, some websites, et cetera, but some of them were not legit, and they were pretending that they are legit. And it's an American story because obviously that space attracted a lot of scammers because they could make a lot of money overnight, right? And that's why we always had to fight with them, but still they would catch up, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why at some point of time I realized, well, the company was doing really well, but I was like, well, I stopped to be really excited every day because I'm like, the money is not the answer because I started to feel that, well, I actually wanted to work on some great things and some, I don't know, like innovative things and like bringing value and not trying to just basically catch bad actors and deal with all these litigations, fraud, et cetera. I'm like, no, I want to do something else.
I could see myself.
Yeah.
I could see that itch. So what was the next thing that we were able to capture that excitement and
Then it was like 2016. It was the beginning of the rise of augmented reality computer vision hype. That was the first wave at that time. At that time, Snap acquired Luxury, actually a company founded by my friend with the main office in Odessa. Okay. That created these face filters.
Okay.
So if not Luxury, then we wouldn't probably have face filters on Snap. And I think Snap needed Luxury more than Luxury needed Snap, because otherwise Snap wouldn't just a primitive app where your photo gets removed every day, right? Nothing more than that. So that's why it was like one of the things that inspired me, this Luxury company, right? Acquired for $150 million with zero revenue.
That's one of the biggest exits, I think, I know of like on the Ukraine
scene. So
this is like your friend?
Friend Victor. He was at Snap for a long time, and now he lives in Thailand.
Okay.
So that thing also was one of the things that really inspired me, and I started to look in that direction. But I didn't want to do another face filter app or the app to put your makeup in AR on your face, something like that. I wanted to create some meaningful use case that brings value, can bring value to many industries via augmented reality or computer vision. So to build something on top of smartphone camera that can be used for businesses and consumers at scale. And that's how we got into, I had my first co-founder. Yeah, actually, we'll go back to co-founder issues because I went through some issues in this company.
Yeah. But
so I started it with my friend at the time who was running So basically said, hey, I'm still running my previous company,
right?
But what if you quit your job and I'll start paying you salary here's the budget. You just go and hire the best engineers you can find. And what was good about Ukraine that we had a lot of R&D centers, Samsung, Luxoft. Like Luxoft, these are people building apps for cars, and especially right. with computer vision, etc. For Mercedes, for Porsche, etc. Like lots of R&D centers.
You had the right people.
We were able to poach them, right? And we poached my future technical co-founder from Intel. He's in London now. But yeah, so, and then, and I was like, for the first year, they were just experimenting. It was pure experimentation, pure R&D.
Yeah.
I was running my first company, but I was spending more and more time with 3D Look, with new company, because I'm like, wow, that's so exciting. That's so cool. Because yeah, we wanted basically to unlock to democratize mobile body scanning. Because before 3D Look, Microsoft tried it and failed. Amazon tried it and failed. And then Amazon tried it until recently and failed, right? Hundreds of startups tried it and failed. Because the idea is obvious. Idea is not genius at all. Like, okay, what if you can scan and measure someone's body using your smartphone to get the right size of clothing, to see your fat percentage, your body composition?
Right. You're wearing a Whoop band right
now. Yeah. Like, what if you can do many things with your body data, with your body, we can call it body profile, whatever, right? Idea is on the surface, but execution really, I mean, just not non-trivial at all. And we just, why we succeeded from a technology standpoint at first, because I think we started, first of all, I brought my people from a previous company to run operations, finances, etc. So we were able to kickstart like the operations very quickly. Also recruiting very quickly.
Yeah.
Recruiting was the critical piece because we had to find the best engineers, right? And then I was really good, I think, in customer development and kind of early sales to find first design partners. And I've been already spending more time in US than in the US than in Ukraine, or maybe like equal amount of time. That's how we got it. And then I said, okay, what if I just want to do it full time? I don't know. Because I had like every Monday I would do my previous company, every Tuesday I would do my.
So you had it split up by day?
But by day, or sometimes not by day, but just half of the day. And I'm like, well, okay. By the time I do that advertising, I'm just counting seconds, really. I'm dreaming about switching to, and I'm like, why am I doing this? Fuck it. And then I appointed a different CEO there. And I went to build just 3D Look, and I had a conflict with my investors in my previous company, but we figured it out. But the idea was that it's not like I decided to abandon it. There were several reasons why, because the market really started to go into a decline because of all that fraud. A lot of big advertisers started to sue their agencies, like Uber sued their agency. Big game developers sued their agencies because agencies were allowing a lot of fraudulent traffic to get into their apps, right? And at that time, and also we suffered because we were sitting below agencies, right? And we suffered because big advertisers were completely shutting down that entire channel, more cost per install channel, right? But that's why it was going in decline. I was like, well, let's just maybe make sure we can sustain it. But I mean, I just want to do, at the same time, I'm not the guy, I'm not the best guy to run a company during bear market, right? I want to do something else, but here is the CEO, right?
Okay.
And I switched to 3D Look, and then it was super exciting. I mean, like 7 years, and I'm not very involved in operations now. And yeah, the company went through a lot of stages because we worked on something super new and still work on it. We went through fast growth VC, part of a story, raised 16 million. Then we understood that, well, we got early design partners, we got innovators, but we couldn't move further according on this kind of demand curve to early majority because it was still very new.
How did you manage distribution? Was it mostly through partners?
No, directly, because through partner we wasted a lot of time on channel partners,
yeah.
Like Accenture, Deloitte, BCG, you name it. But the problem is that what I realized that if you still haven't figured out how to sell it yourself, the partners would never figure out
right.
better than you, right? So we wasted yeah. a lot of time on partners, but in fact, it didn't help us. And then we said, no, we're not going to talk to partners. Only recently, only this year, we started to launch first pretty good channel partnerships. Only now, right?
Yeah.
So then, after being on a fast growth VC-backed trajectory, then we realized that we raised too much money, we were overspending, we had to become much more leaner version of the company because at some point of time I had like 50 engineers or something. I mean, why? Now we have in total 20 people and we're doing much better.
It's interesting because a lot of times whenever you add
yeah.
people to a yeah. company, a VC-backed company,
yeah.
it's a little tricky just because you have, you're adding layers of communication,
yeah.
right? And it's exponentially getting. So whenever we're talking about the body scan technology piece. There's a lot of different pieces that are pretty big in the United States that are coming to the forefront. So one is the ability to be able to scan your body and do DEXA scans, like mm-hmm. high detailed scans. Yeah. And like you're meeting people in like parking lots and stuff mm-hmm. like that to get scanned in a truck.
Yeah,
it's like an awesomely weird customer experience. And then the other one is like custom tailoring your supplements and your diet to what you need to do. Have you crossed that bridge from like doing the scan to getting into other areas?
Yeah, I mean, we started in fashion actually, because I mean, when we were still very active in even like in R&D, like only doing experiments for a year,
yeah,
I already been doing customer development. We didn't have anything to show besides just slides, fancy slides, but I've been good with slides. So, but I had three industries to check. First one was like entertainment related, like basically like create a 3D model, dress it in the funny outfit,
right.
put it. And at that time it was too early. Now I think this could be really successful, this use case for TikTok generation. But at that time it was just, people just didn't get it. Then we tested health and fitness. And at that time it was too early. They perceived it as a vitamin, as something nice to have, but not really a painkiller. It actually changed because at that time AI was not a real thing for digital health and fitness. But then we went into fashion, and I was lucky to meet my second co-founder, Whitney, who spent 25 years in fashion industry. And
okay.
she helped me to basically shape our vision for this industry. And then we felt pull from the industry. They wanted it, right? Really badly.
Did you really go the B2B route?
Yeah, of course. I've been building on the B2B company. So right. B2B2C company. We were charging businesses, but we were creating value also for consumers.
And you still have your stake in this company. It's still growing.
Of
You're
course.
Just less involved in this.
Yeah, I'm less involved because it's 8 years since the beginning of the company. And
yeah.
And I'm like, well, I want to devote the major part of my energy to something different.
Right.
My board is fine. I mean, yeah, I have my leadership team basically is with me since the early days, or almost since the early days, so they can handle operations well. I think we need to wait for a few more years to grow for a bit for a few more years until it becomes industry standard because it's still very novel. However, now, especially since we got into digital health and fitness, it started to evolve much faster. We started to close deals faster, and that industry actually understands it, even it needs it much stronger than fashion. Yeah.
One of the things I want to ask you is about what comes next, because we, as like entrepreneurs, usually you think about it as like a linear thing. Like you start a company, you grow the company, and then you sell the company, right? Yeah. But it's really more of like a cycle. And I think you're experiencing this now where you're talking about how do you scale what you've learned through other people? How do you build a venture studio? How do you get involved in different ideas?
Yeah.
Where's your head at? Because you have a lot of experience and you kind of already have all these different investments in this ecosystem that's pretty ripe for you to do a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah, I try different things. And now, you know what? That's a very good question, because before, until this point, when I was starting something new, I always had some timeline in mind, exactly like you said. Okay, in 8 years, I'm going to exit it. In 5 years, I'm going to exit it.
Yeah.
So I was building for an exit. And now is the first time in my life, and I'm like, well, I don't want to be in a rush. Maybe I'm going to build something for the rest of my life. Like, why do I need to rush? Right? Why do I need to rush?
And it's kind of nice that you build a team for a longer period of time.
Yeah, but I have a lot of specific knowledge that I obtained in the last 15 years of building and investing, et cetera. And I have some very core team from my previous businesses to help me with that. So I think I have all the ingredients in place to build a holding company, basically, that is going to, instead of going 0 to 1 again, basically have a shortcut to buy undervalued companies, especially VC-backed, that are not on VC growth trajectory anymore, and turn them into profitable businesses while making their shareholders at least somewhat happy, maybe not very happy, but at least okay.
Yeah.
So that's the goal.
I think you have a lot of the, like to your point, you have a lot of the Lego building blocks that you kind of need to be able to do this. And your superpower of having sold a business and then having the team of developers that you know and can trust is a big part of the lift. With operator equity, there's a couple things that I think were kind of important. And one is understanding exactly what type of deals you want to be working with.
Yep.
Not working with deals that are too small, because if they're too small, it takes a lot more lift. And then like running away as far as possible from the CEO role. Mm-hmm. Like, CEO is normally like this title that's very nice whenever you're starting a company.
Yeah.
And for me, if I'm running multiple different companies, it's hard to have that title and do what you need to do.
Title. Because you're also very, very biased. You don't see it from the outside. Yeah. It's good to be focused for a while, but not, but then it becomes more like it hurts your long-term growth.
I think it's interesting from like a cash flow standpoint, from you getting to flex like your entrepreneurial muscle as far as like your creativity, and you get to see some things that are 0 to 1 and get to see them like hit that scale path. I think that's pretty exciting. Do you have an idea for name?
I'm thinking about Rebel Capital.
I think that sounds pretty good.
Because we're going to definitely break the rules. Are gonna do something different.
This is like a little bit of like a plug, but like I do think that it's very interesting whenever I see entrepreneurs that continue this like cycle. Mm. And because I would personally want to sell to another entrepreneur, I would personally want my business to be sold to someone that has ran a business before that understands what it's like.
Of course, because it can go much, the deal can be closed much faster because there is some common ground.
With a lot of the entrepreneurs that I talk to, many of them sell to like a private equity firm or to a strategic, and then they have to go work inside that company for a while. Yeah. I think it's kind of fun if you sell to another entrepreneur. It's fun that you get to work side by side with that entrepreneur during your earnout period. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of something there. If people are rebels and they want to find you, where do they go?
LinkedIn and Twitter, obviously. That's it. I'm very open. I'm trying to answer to anyone, at least anyone who writes me direct message. At least I'm trying. I'm doing my best.
Vadim, I love talking to you. You're doing some fantastic stuff, and I think we can probably compare some notes probably in the next upcoming months as you build this out. So thanks for being on the pod.
That wraps up today's episode. For more inspiring stories and valuable lessons from successful entrepreneurs, be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get podcasts. Thanks for listening. Until next time, keep pushing boundaries and writing your next chapter.
Hi there, this is Nate Houghton with the Made It Podcast. Wanted to let you know that this episode is supported by Rush Imhotep. Rush is a financial advisor with Northwestern Mutual. He's one of our preferred advisors that we like to connect people with, specializes in working with individuals with non-traditional career paths like entrepreneurs. If you want to learn more or connect with Rush, you should go to wealthwithrush.com. The link is in the episode bio below. Check it out. Let us know what you think.
Hey, podcast listeners. If you guys are interested in cold email outbound outreach that actually works, or thought leadership and how to build a community around some of the things that you're working on, I highly recommend IncendiumStrategies.com. They're not just sponsoring this podcast, but they're also helping us with a lot of the communities that we run on the back end. So if that's something that resonates with you guys and you're interested in learning more, check out IncendiumStrategies.com. Thank you guys, and back to the pod.